John 21. If you want to turn to the passage that we're going to be looking at tonight, we start with John chapter 21, verses 15 through 17. As you're turning there, let's go back and highlight a couple of things. We'll read verses 15 through 17 in just a moment. We pointed out in last week's class that Jesus doesn't address Peter as Peter. He addresses him as Simon. What's the name Peter mean? Anybody recall? Rock. Well, why might that have been an inappropriate designation on this occasion? All right, Peter wasn't very rock-like. He had denied Jesus three times, and now he's out there fishing with some other fellas. Anybody remember how many fish they caught? 153. Teresa, I think, made a good point. Brian brought this to my attention as well as we discussed this a little bit. If you are a fisherman, you're probably interested in two things when it comes to fishing. Number one, how many and how big. All right, how large, how big. And that very well may have been the predominant thought there. 153, pretty good catch. And they were large, they were great fish. So we talked about that sufficiently in our last class when that was covered. Then we've got in verses 15 through 17 this famous discussion about Jesus, Peter, and love. And we started on the fringes of that last week, or last time, but let's go ahead and get it before us now. So when they had broken their fast, that is, it was breakfast time, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, lovest thou me more than these? He saith unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my lambs. He saith to him again a second time, Simon, son of John, lovest thou me? He saith unto him, Yes, Lord, or Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Tend my sheep. He saith unto him the third time, Simon, son of John, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved, because he said unto him the third time, Lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee. Now, as you look at these three questions and Peter's three answers, you go back to one of the things that we discussed earlier. I said the word these is not specifically identified. Some people have said, well, that means, you know, these as far as the fishing boats and the fishing tackle. I don't think that's probably what he has in mind. We went back a little bit in biblical history, and you remember what Peter had as far as an attitude? What was his attitude? Jesus, if all these other guys deny you, what's going to be true of me? I'm always going to be true, blue, and loyal. And if you go back and you look at that history, that's my explanation for the these. Jesus is saying, do you still in your mind think that you love me more than these other apostles love me? Well, that was a good question for Peter. That was an important question for Peter to ask, because not long from this time, he and the other guys are going to need to go out and be preaching and teaching. And if he has an air of superiority, if he feels like he is better or greater than the other guys, that is going to be a significant problem. So again, look carefully at what we just read. Simon, do you love me more than these? What don't you find in Simon or Peter's response? What does he omit?
These.
He just kind of apparently wants to distance himself, as far as I see it, from that past problem. It's kind of like, well, that's you know that I love you. And this idea that I'm going to be superior, this idea that I'm going to be head and shoulders above the other guys, I've overcome that. So Jesus seems to have been trying to help him come to that conclusion, and finally he has reached that state. What's the Lord's response then? I want you to do what? I want you to feed my lambs. What had Peter been doing many years before, and even as you look at John 21? He said to the other guys, he said, let's go fishing. And now Jesus comes along on this occasion, not long before the day of Pentecost comes, not long before there's going to be that great need for evangelism, and Jesus says, feed my lambs. If you contrast that with something, in contrast to doing what? You were a fisherman. You were out there in the lake fishing for literal fish, and now you need to care for sheep, which would be my lambs, my people. So Peter, go out there, start with evangelistic work, and the people who are converted, I want you to assist them in their new life. Now you do find, and we'll pause here in a couple minutes for some questions, but you do find that Peter is given some reassurance by Jesus. That's offered a couple of times. You find that the question is repeated in verses 16 and 17, and Peter is given two more opportunities to say that he's greater. Peter, do you love me? Well, he once again focuses on Jesus. There's nothing said about the other apostles. And he does take those three full opportunities to affirm his love for the Lord. Never again on any of these three occasions affirming that his love is better or more or somehow superior than the other apostles. Now Jesus, as you go back to that first point in verse 15, he says, feed. That is a present imperative. You may remember that the imperative is a command. So Jesus commands Peter, and the tense of the command would be present. I want you to continually feed. I want you to continually take care of my people. Then he uses a different word. He switches from feed to what in verse 16? It's also a present imperative. First says feed, then he says, I want you to tend. And then in verse 17, what word does he use? I want you to, all right, we're back to that same word, which is probably translated feed or something very similar. Why use two different words, feed and tend? I think that's exactly right. If we take that one step further, Jesus, as he talks about the spiritual care, what do we find as far as an advertisement in our area when it comes to car care? We offer what kind of car care? We offer
complete.
I don't know who said that. Was that you, Josh? Oh, that was Jeff. Good for you. We, bumper to bumper, we can take care of your car, whether it's repair or whether it's washing it, making sure it's nice on the inside and out. It is bumper to bumper. It is complete care. That, to me, seems to be Jesus' point to Peter when he talks about tending and feeding the flock. You take care of my people to the best of your ability. All their spiritual needs, you be one of the fellows who's going to be working with the other apostles to ensure that they receive the wide range of care. Then, let's make this point as well. As Jesus talks about his people, looking in 15, 16, and 17, do we have at least two different words to describe them? All right, we've got lambs and sheep. When you think about those two different words, what comes to mind as far as a distinction? Some are
lambs of the young.
All right.
Sheep are the elder.
We've got the older ones and we've got the younger ones. Is that true in the church?
Yes.
Yes. Do the younger and the older sometimes have, quote unquote, different needs?
Yeah.
Sure. And how might you summarize those different needs?
Are you talking about age or?
You can look at it either way. Either way, good question to clarify, but let's get a broad range of answers. What are the different needs?
You would think that the newer Christians would need more knowledge.
Okay, and certainly some of the basic knowledge, the first principles, as the Bible refers to that in the book of Hebrews, so the basic stuff. But if you are a mature Christian, and there's some congregations where you have several mature Christians, do you want to hear the first principles every time you come? Well, I mean, you probably should have that stuff pretty well down, and you probably could lay that out as well as any preacher. So don't neglect those old truths, but at the same time, hopefully move on to some deeper things which will challenge and help mature Christians do a little bit better. What else? As far as trying to watch over the lambs and the sheep, when we think about it in spiritual terms.
Make sure the feed is pure.
All right. More mature Christians should be a little more sensitive to that as far as spotting problems, but the younger certainly might have some difficulties there, but at any age or any state of maturity, that needs to be done. What else? Just like an infant, if you have an infant versus someone who is 19 years old, is there a difference as far as how they're treated when it comes to care and watchfulness?
One is constant, the other is kind of okay to begin to get out on their own.
Yeah. Martin showed me an app that they have. I used to kid Beth about this. We're going to go ahead and track your car. And she really got after me on that. We really didn't have the technology back then when she was driving, but they do now. And you can actually track somebody. You have the app, and they have the app, and you can go ahead and follow somebody. And maybe you're not too concerned about that when your kids are 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19. But when you have a six-month-old, you're pretty concerned about where they might be crawling or where they might be heading around. The house. And when you think about that in terms of the spiritual realm, you have somebody who's a new Christian. There's probably going to be a lot more reason for concern there than somebody who's been living the Christian life 30, 40, 50, maybe 60 years. So you're still concerned about both. So Jesus, as he starts talking about this in terms of different words to describe what to do, different words to describe who the people are, he makes it very, very clear to Peter, I want you to care for these people to do your very best. Peter, in his denials, they'd been very serious, they'd been very public, and now Jesus, as he is restoring this fella, you find that he is also doing that in a public way, it's being done in a very serious way, and then maybe to cap this off, maybe not so much in Acts 1, but in Acts 2, all the way up through Acts chapter, what was it? I was thinking 12, maybe? At least 12. Who is kind of the focal point of the apostles? Peter. Now, maybe that's just the way that things worked out. I can't help but wonder, though, if maybe that wasn't one more way of God saying, look, this apostle who denied Jesus three times, I'm going to devote a lot of attention, especially in the first 12 chapters of Acts, to say what? He was not only restored, John 21, he was restored fully. We'll stop there and see if there's some things that you want to add or ask.
Back up just a little bit there. There's another thing that we might think of from high young and older's protection. The young ones you've already mentioned, kind of may have to carry them around. Mm-hmm. But there's older ones, as we really age in things, there's other kinds of protection that we do need. We need help from others that can give us that help. And that's part of the job of a shepherd or as an elder to see what the flock is in need of.
Yeah.
And that's what he's telling Peter. You feed them, tend to them, and then you feed them some more.
There have been some older saints. This doesn't come up too often in life as far as my knowledge. But I have seen it a few times where an older saint will say to somebody else, maybe somebody who's 20 or 30 years younger, and you know maybe they've got some respect and some confidence in that person, they say, hey, look, I'm getting up there in age. And if it seems like I just start heading off the deep end in some way, shake me up. Let me know. Correct me, because I don't want to head off in the wrong direction. And that's really commendable for that person who does that. But that does show some recognition, some maturity, that in life, things can perhaps begin to go awry for different reasons, and the person is thinking, I might need some help. So that's very true.
We might think of those that are sick and not able to get out as much,
yeah,
that really need some special help.
Sure, some encouragement there for them. Brian?
King James uses feed my sheep, feed my lambs, feed my sheep, or whatever. But, okay. But it doesn't use the word tend. Does tend go with either sheep or lambs in the version you're using? You mentioned the difference in that also, tend and feed.
Okay.
King James has feed every time. Is tend associated with sheep and feed on lambs?
Poimen, which would be one of the words that we would associate with elders, is going to be one of the words that's used. I'm going to have, before I give you an absolute yes, I'm thinking that I did see a distinction in the Greek text. But I'm going to check that afterwards, and not right now. But I'm pretty sure that there's a distinction there, but I have to nail that down when I can be a little more positive. Anybody else? Now let's get into something that you've probably heard about, and I kind of hinted that we would talk about this, and now is the time for that. Anybody ever hear the fact that there's more than one love in this there's more than one word for love in this discussion between Peter and Jesus? Okay, at least a few hands are going up, some have nodded, so let's talk about that right now. Jesus, in the first two questions, uses that word for love, which is agapeo. We typically think of agape love. And that word agape means what kind of love? It is that love which is
universal.
All right, basically that unconquerable goodwill. We love people, God loves people, regardless of what they do. Agape love says you have value, and because you have value, I love you. You might seem worthless, you might seem offensive, you might seem unclean to me in every possible way, but still, I have love for you because you have value. Sherman, did you have a thought? Okay, and that would be a nice summation for that word, unconditional love. Well, so Jesus says to Peter, do you have agape love for me? Question one. What's Peter's response? Oh, I love you, but Peter doesn't use the word agape. What word does he use? He uses the word phileo. And when we think about phileo, a good general definition for phileo would be what? Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love. So some have suggested that that is a lesser kind of love, and that's what Peter does. So then we have question number two. Jesus comes along and says, do you love me? Agape love. And question number two is answered by Peter, I have phileo love for you. And then Jesus comes down to question number three, but this time he doesn't use the word agape. He says, do you have phileo love for me? And what does Peter say? He says, I do have phileo. So agape, phileo, 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 when it comes down to that third time. Now, if you have some commentaries or maybe some textual notes, some study notes in your Bible, you might find that there are some commentators and sometimes some well-respected commentators who have a lot to say as far as whether or not the different words for love are significant. You might find some who say that there is a definite word for, there's a definite distinction here because of the words that are used. Some claim that Peter willingly had this phileo, this brotherly love for Jesus, but he wasn't willing to say, I've got the agape love, perhaps because he was thinking of the denials. And because of the denials, Peter certainly could not go quite that far. They might further say, well, if that is true, and that's perhaps what you might find as far as a lot of the works that you have, they would say that Jesus maybe was using the word agapeo, that word agape, the noun form, to motivate Peter to seek a higher form of love. And then you might find, and this is a little more radical, they would say that Peter was trying to be deceptive. Jesus said to you, love me, agape, and Peter just trying to kind of, you know, be, you know, really clever, said, well, I phileo you, and we'll just kind of deal with the discussion like that. Even if we can sign off on the first idea that Peter was thinking about the denials and refused to use the word agape, I think he probably had more sense and try to pull a fast one on Jesus. After 3 years, he surely should have known better, and certainly after the resurrection, I just don't see that as far as being too realistic. You can find, if you really wanted to dig into this, and we're not going to go into it this deeply, but if you can find that as you go through John's writings, especially in the book of John, you can find places where agape and phileo are by John used almost interchangeably. And there are certainly some passages where agape and phileo do not bring out the kind of distinction that some try to bring out in John 21. Now, that doesn't necessarily prove anything. Just because you're using the words over here as virtual synonyms, that does not necessarily mean that you're using them over here in the same way. But I will tell you this, John, and this is sometimes true for us, if you write, for example, let's think of a sentence or two. The pews were very hard today. And you need to go back and continue talking about the pews that you sat on at services. How might you rewrite that sentence to say the same thing? The pews were very hard today.
Pews had no cushion.
All right, that might be one. How about the seats were uncomfortable? Now you say pew, but now you say seat. How else might you rewrite that sentence? The pews were uncomfortable today. The seats were hard. I came away with some aches in my body because where I sat was not comfortable on my body. So you can switch that around three or four ways. And just because you're using a stylistic variation, it doesn't mean necessarily that you're trying to draw a huge distinction between pew and seat. And John does that. As you look at his writings, you find that in the book of Revelation. You also find that here. For example, what did we just see in verses 15 and 16? Tend my sheep, feed my lambs. Now, as we were going through that, I did try to draw a little bit of a distinction because I think you can make one. But still, a lamb and a sheep. Are you dealing with a lamb and a horse? No, you're still in the same basic category. You're not trying to draw that much of a distinction. And then, too, you think about those words, which, once again, we drew a slight distinction between, but tend and shepherd. Still essentially the same? Maybe a slight variation, but not all that much. And then if you were to go back in verses 8 and 9, and look at the original text, you would find that John used two different words for fish. Now, why use two different words? I think the same answer is given when we have someone today, we're reading something that was written, or if you hear a speaker changes things up. We perhaps are not someone who's fond of hearing the same word 20 times in the same presentation. But when we think about the Bible, for example, if you have someone who's speaking about the Bible, writing about the Bible, and that speaker, that writer, is conscious of the book that he's describing, how might he describe it? It is the Bible. It is? It's the Word of God. It is Scripture. Somebody might refer to it as the sword, the good book. Now, that might not be my preference, but still somebody might refer to it in that way. What else? All right, the Holy Bible. The gospel. So there are at least six or seven descriptions right off. And other people have done that, and certainly John was capable of doing that as well. There's also this point. Peter's use of phileo may have been akin to someone saying they love their best friend. For example, I say to you, I love you, and I don't use the word agape. I use the word phileo. Well, is that necessarily a statement that I really don't have great love and respect and admiration for you? No. It simply might be, I have this fondness for you. And that may have been what was on Peter's mind. What I think we do need to focus on is that the love that Peter had, Jesus gave him three opportunities to express that the same number of times that Peter denied him, and Peter used those opportunities. And then Peter was told how he was going to serve Jesus, what was going to happen in verses 18 and 19. Then too, and we'll pause for comments after this, there's a practical point here as far as what we really love in life. Do we love Jesus more than some other things and people? Number one, do we love the Lord more than our relatives? Sometimes a person has relatives come into town, and what do they say? Well, family's in town or friends are in town, so what are we going to do? We're going to stay home tonight. Well, I understand that you may not see them all that long for whatever time that they're in town. Maybe they've got some other people to visit. I understand that you may not see them that often. But still, the question becomes, who are you going to put first? You have a similar question. Do we love Jesus more than money? That's a question that some people would have to say, well, I'm going to have to think about that for a little bit. You have sometimes some people who spend a ton of money on lavish vacations. And yet when it comes time for the Lord's work, what do? It's a mere pittance, if that, when it comes to contribution. Do we love Jesus more than entertainment and pleasure? Do we always have time and money for fun but not the Lord's service? Do we love Jesus more than the praise of men? So you could go down and perhaps have a whole class or a whole sermon on do we love Jesus more than, and fill in the blank. Anything that you want to discuss before we turn our attention to something else? Gary?
I wonder if there was more conversation or more actions going on during this conversation. Was it just as succinct as it is recorded here in Scripture, or were there other things going on? And I wonder then if Jesus says, do you unconditionally love me? Well, I don't understand unconditional love as much as he does. So maybe I only feel qualified to say phileo as opposed to agape.
I think that's entirely possible. Now, as far as the first part of the question, exactly who was there? We know that you have the guys out there in the boat. We've got about seven people total. They come in. Jesus either has fixed breakfast or somehow breakfast has been made. And you've got about eight guys there around the fire. If you're asking if the other people besides Peter and Jesus were involved with anything, my thinking is that they were primarily listening. I think that probably was a very intriguing conversation for them to hear. And if I were there, I'd probably be thinking, I'm hoping he's not going to get around to me. You know, Peter's already in kind of the hot seat, so let's just let him and Jesus have that discussion, and we'll just stand on the side here and watch that a bit.
The switch from agape to phileo, that's an interchangeable. I think that Peter perceived it as having been asked the same question three times.
Mm-hmm.
So he almost indicates to us that they are interchangeable. It wasn't technically the same question. All three of the questions were somewhat a little bit different because the first one included these.
Yeah.
But he perceived it as the same question.
Yeah, and I think that's probably true. And we haven't gotten there quite yet, but I think when he gives that third answer, you know that I love you, that it does seem like it was the same thing. But like some other times in Jesus' life, he asked some things and there was more there than maybe initially met the eye. And maybe on this occasion, remember, these guys are still kind of coming off the resurrection. I mean, they'd had a lot to process. And for Jesus to make this fine point, again, it's what time of day? It's early morning, days just kind of started to break, and, maybe they were early morning people, and they were just ready to go first thing like that, or maybe they were still a little sleepy, and so I wouldn't be too hard on Peter, but there are some people who really rake him over the coals, no pun intended there, with a little fire of charcoal, but I'm a little hesitant to do that, and Jesus certainly seems to have brought him back up to where he was formerly. Anybody else? Yeah. They were behind locked doors. They were fearful. Again, they're still trying to sort some things out. So. Yeah. Okay. That it? All right. Let's go and take a look. Same chapter, but now let's see what we have in verses 18 through 23. Verily, verily, I say unto thee. Now, this is Peter that Jesus is still talking to. When thou wast young, thou girdest or clothed thyself, and walked whither thou wouldest. But when thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee, and carry thee whither thou wouldest not. Now this he spake, signifying by what manner of death he should glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he saith unto him, Follow me. But Peter, turning about, seeth a disciple whom Jesus loved following, who also leaned back on his breast at the supper, and said, Lord, who is he that betrayeth thee? Peter therefore, seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? Jesus saith unto him, If I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Follow thou me. This saying therefore went forth among the brethren, that that disciple should not die. Yet Jesus said not unto him that he should not die, but if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Peter has been told what to do. Love me? Yes, yes, yes. Tend, feed my sheep, care for my lambs. And now Jesus switches gears. He said, Peter, I'm going to tell you a little bit about your future. Jesus knew what was going to happen, and he gets a preview of what was going to take place in the later years. Before we talk about the future, let's pause for this quick point. A lot of times people think about the future, they think about God knowing the future, and we say God knows the future. But here in John 21, don't we have a different point? Not the future, God also knew about what? Peter's, well, there was that, but can you go back any further? Didn't he also know about Peter's past? He said, Peter, this is what you did. Maybe we often think that God doesn't remember the past. He does.
Well, Peter said in verse 13, Lord, you know everything.
Yes. Yeah. And he does. That's a good lesson for us sometimes, especially we think, well, does anybody know the good that we've done or this, that, or the other thing? God knows and God doesn't forget. Jesus reminded this apostle of how in the earlier years he'd been able to dress himself, he'd been able to go where he wanted, he'd been able to do what he wanted. That to me indicates that Peter probably had pretty good health and there was great freedom there. That's in the first part of verse 18. But Jesus said, the day is going to come, Peter, when you're going to be old. Now, how old was that going to be? Well, I'm thinking at least 70. If you got to 70 in the ancient world, you were doing reasonably well. And maybe he went beyond that. But probably at least 70. And Jesus said, when you get old, what's going to happen? Your hands are going to be stretched out. Well, that would seem kind of odd. And then what else does he say? You're going to do what when it comes to God? You're going to...
Someone else will...
Well, and do you have in verse 19 something else about God? Yeah, you're going to glorify God. How are you going to do that? You're going to glorify God with your outstretched hands. As Betty mentioned, there would also be somebody else who would dress him and take him to where? A place where he didn't want to go. All of that somehow is explained by verse 19. There's a general reference there to Peter's what? Peter, you're going to die. Jesus didn't expand on that. There is a tradition from both Eusebius as well as Tertullian. They were ancient writers, and they suggest or claim that Peter was crucified about 35 years after these words were spoken. That would have been about AD 67, 68, not too far from the time that we believe that Paul was also put to death. Well, if you're crucified, what happens to your arms? They're probably going to be stretched out. And very likely, if that tradition is correct, that was a fulfillment of what we are dealing with here. Do you think Peter actively sought crucifixion? I don't think so. It sounds like Jesus said, this is probably going to be, this is going to be how you go. And that's probably not too surprising with Peter. One of the interesting things about the tradition is the way that Peter was crucified. Again, this is according to the reports that we have, maybe true, maybe not. Anybody remember anything about the tradition? Crucified upside down. Now, I have no idea whether or not that's true. But as I think about that tradition, it does sound very Peter-like, doesn't it? Why did Peter, if he was crucified upside down, why did he want that?
So it wouldn't be the same way as Christ.
Well, you're on the right track. He didn't feel like he was worthy to be crucified like Jesus was. And that, to me, sounds very much like Peter, the very impetuous fellow. He just pops off with something, and maybe he rethought that if he really did die that way, and he really did die upside down. But you really have to, when Peter comes along and says, I love you, even though he uses that word phileo, if this is how he died, and again, at least the crucifixion would seem to be consistent with what Jesus says here in John chapter 21, it really shows that a fellow was committed to the Lord. You have there, too, this information. Peter's getting this information, and it certainly doesn't sound very pleasant for him, but what was the pressing need at this point? Don't get all tied up with what's going to happen in the future. Think about when. Think about now. Think about today. And what was Jesus' instruction? Today, until that time comes, what do you need to do? You need to follow me. And that is a present that's ongoing. As far as a tense, that's also an imperative. It's kind of interesting to me that when you look at that word which is translated follow, that's found 90 times in the New Testament. And most of those places are in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So that is a very, very important word in the life of Christ. You have, too, a passage that you can tie in with this. Remember Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Looking unto Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, we look, we continue with him, we follow on, and so forth. Now, the Lord has given Peter some information. But it's just like today. You have somebody who comes up, and they want some information, and you give them enough information as far as this is sufficient for you, but what happens? Whether it's a child or sometimes it's an adult. You give them the information, and what do they want?
More.
They want more. I'm not satisfied. Is that what Peter did? That's what Peter did. I mean, Jesus says, look, follow me. That's what you need to do now. This is how you're going to, things are going to work out. You're not going to have some pleasant experiences in the future. Indicates that this is going to be the way that he's going to die, that death is going to glorify God. But Peter, not satisfied with that information, wants to know who's going to happen, what's going to happen to who else. All right, the disciple whom Jesus loved, that's going to be in verse 20, and we believe that that is a reference to John, the author of this book. Now, John noted that he had asked Jesus who was going to betray him, and that, of course, refers back to Judas. Yeah, I think that's a natural thing. If this is what I get, or this is in store for me, what's going to happen to them? It's a natural human tendency. Was now the time to talk about how the apostles were going to die? No. Do you think the Lord also knew how John was going to die? I would say so. Do you think he knew how all the apostles were going to die? I would say so. But that was not something that needed to be discussed. Peter wanted to press, but Jesus stops him. He wanted to pry. Jesus stopped him. Is there an implied lesson there for us? Sometimes a person comes, they ask, oh, Gary, I'll let you maybe finish it out.
Well, I was kind of thinking this is similar to other teachings where it said, don't worry about tomorrow.
Okay.
It'll be taken care of. You'll be taken care of.
Yeah. There is that, and that's a great point. Is there a second lesson here as far as prying? Sometimes a person comes, they ask for some information, we give them an appropriate answer, they are not pleased with the answer. They want more information. They continue to press. What's the lesson from John 21? I've answered your question. Move on. We're done. Now somebody says, well, that's not fair. That's not right. That's not kind. Well, that's what the Lord did. So if you're not satisfied, I'm sorry. I can understand why you might want more information. But Jesus did not allow this situation to go any further, according to what we have in the text. A couple of the quick points, and then we'll see if there's something that you want to interject. Jesus' question about returning and John still being alive, would you say that that's hypothetical or not? If he tarries, if John is still alive when I come, Jesus said, what's that to you? Who do you need to be focused on, Peter? You. And if John, I deal with him in a different way. If I let John live and live and live and he were still alive in our day and time, 2,000 years plus later, what's that going to matter to you, Peter? This is how you're going to die. And his life, or the lack thereof, is not going to have any effect on you. Notice the point. Peter wanted to compare himself to somebody else, didn't he? John? And what Jesus say? Don't. Do people still have that temptation today? They want to compare themselves to somebody else? Do you think that people sometimes want to compare themselves to somebody else and then complain to God? God, why can't I be like him, her, them? Why can't our house, our congregation, our car, our job, whatever, be like them? John 21. Focus on your own life, on your own situation.
Well, we've just seen Peter. Just a little bit before this, I'm not like them. I'm going to turn you down.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So we can see the same thing here.
Yeah. It's a strange quirk that people have, but they can just flip from here to there, and it's really unusual. But that's a brilliant point and very good. But yes, excellent thought. That it? Gary?
I think you hit the nail on the head there about comparing itself to somebody else. And there's a time and a place for all information to be revealed. You know, you can't, because if you told him too much, then who knows where you're going.
Yeah. People can become obsessed with information. And as far as Peter's nature, that may not have been the best thing for Jesus to have gone. I mean, that could have been destructive to him. The old illustration is a young lady gets married, and if somebody were to tell her up front, you're going to have to wash 1.5 million dishes in your lifetime, or you're going to have to spend 1,000 hours on the vacuum cleaner. I think that you probably have a lot of people back out of marriage. If you could just go down and say, this is how you're going to spend X number of years of your life. And people would say, not me. And there's no way I'm going to sign up for that. But if you can take things day by day, sometimes hour by hour, week by week, month by month, year by year, and bite that off in smaller size increments, it's fine. It's manageable. But people can literally be overwhelmed with too much. And we do the same thing with kids. We don't just dump everything on them. I know somebody that has taught the kids about the national debt. And at a fairly young age, they showed their child what their share of the national debt was. And the child responded by saying, well, how long do I have to pay that? Well, that kind of freaked the child out because, I mean, you see these thousands, probably tens of thousands of dollars, and it was troubling to the child. Now, they obviously don't have a literal part in paying off the debt, but still, that's just one illustration to show that you want to be careful as far as the information that you share with people. That it? Okay, let's make one other quick comment and then see if there's anything else. There are some people, and even today, who took Jesus' statement about John and they misunderstood it, they reinterpreted it, or misunderstood it to mean that John was not going to die. Well, how do we know that that clearly was not what Jesus meant?
He says so.
Well, okay, there is that, but is there anything else? Yeah, but something even more fundamental than that. Where's John? I mean, if he didn't die, where is he? Why not bring him in today?
Where is John today?
Yeah, where is he? I mean, if he's not dead, he's got to be alive. And if he's alive, then he's somewhere on the earth. But he's not somewhere on the earth, so he did die. So that is one of the, and you could use all the other things as well, but that's one of the things I think that I would point out too, that John is certainly not here. Jesus' words... You're thinking Elijah?
Or
Enoch was translated?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Maybe they're thinking of that. So he didn't die, he was translated.
Maybe, but when Jesus says, if, notice again the wording there, is it in 23? If I will that he tarry till I come. I think that you would probably be inclined to look at that as far as tarrying on the earth. That he was still going to be here, Jesus would come. But there might be some people who would understand it in that way. We do know that with some of the 70 AD folks, those are the people that believe that the second coming was happened at the time of the destruction of Jerusalem and so forth. This is one of the places where they, I think, have come to try to establish that doctrine. But Jesus' point is a hypothetical point. If this were to happen, once again, Peter, what's it matter to you? It doesn't. I've given you your future. I've told you what lies ahead. And whatever happens with John or any of the other apostles, it's not going to have any effect on you. So once again, be concerned with your own life. Follow me. Be faithful. Tim?
Well, in the middle of 23, he clarifies it kind of because he says, yet Jesus didn't say unto him, he shall not die.
Mm-hmm.
But what he did say was, if I will, or if I decide that he should wait until I come, and he says, "What is that to you?" It's
right.
He's not trying to be a smart aleck, but at the same time, right. He's pretty much saying, "This is none of your business."
Yeah, slaps Peter down a little bit and says, "Again, you're focused on the wrong thing here." And kind of going back to the point that Gary raised earlier, people can become distracted and start heading off in different directions and doing all kinds of things. But sometimes they just need to be told, you have enough information, this is where it needs to end. But he did make it very clear that that was not what he was talking about. But somehow, just like people today, they get a piece of information, and by the time it goes through 3 or 4 people or 100 people, you have something that is the complete opposite of how it was originally intended or how it was originally conveyed. And that happened here. That it? Okay, we've got about 3.5 minutes left, and our introduction to evangelism, which is going to need more time than that, but we'll at least start. When we think about the Great Commission, we certainly have the information that we've talked about in John, and that goes all the way back to John chapter 14 and continues on throughout John 15, 16, 17. We've seen that in John 21 as well. But we're probably more familiar with the Great Commission in Matthew's account, Matthew 28, Mark's account, Mark 16, and Luke's account. We do know from Matthew chapter 28 and verse 16 that the 11 were on a mountain in Galilee. That's prior to the giving of the Great Commission. What is not clear to me is whether or not Matthew 28, Mark chapter 16, and Luke chapter 24 were one big Great Commission, and you have 3 accounts of it. Now, that's possible. It's possible that Jesus gave the Great Commission, and these are 3 separate accounts of it. It's also possible, and I kind of favor this view, but I can't prove it, that you may have Matthew 28, Mark 16, and Luke chapter 24 being given on 3 different occasions. Same basic information, but not necessarily at the same time. You find that, remember, again, John, he's going through that at different times, giving the apostles information, and because this was so important, maybe this was stretched out. We do know that as we think about the Great Commission, it's been rightly called the marching orders for the church. Jesus told his people in very clear terms what they need to be doing until he returns at the end of time, and that is to reach people to make disciples of all the nations. God's people have been told what to do, but as we look at human history, that's something that has not always been done in a very good way. When we think about evangelism, it's sometimes been referred to as the last thing that Christians want to do and the first thing that they forsake. When you think about the work of evangelism, will it be a work that we can ever completely fulfill in our lifetime or anybody's lifetime? No. When you look at Matthew chapter 28 and verse 19, there is a word there, there's a noun there, which is ethnos, E-T-H-N-O-S. What does ethnos sound like? Ethnos. Yeah, ethnic or ethnicity. And when you look at that word, I think that points you to every group, every tribe, every language, every country. Anybody know about how many countries there are on the earth?
200.
Very good. Hope you didn't just Google that. You didn't, I know. But I figured somebody was going to be close. But there are about 200 countries, I think just under, maybe 197. And when you think about that word ethnos in Matthew 28 and verse 19, God says, look, it's my will that my word, information about the church, be taken to every one of those countries. But not only every one of those countries, but think about ethnos once again. Who is to be reached in every one of those countries? Every tribe, every dialect. Don't we have, as we think about countries, different segments, even in this country? Don, we were talking about your recent trip, and who do we talk about up there? Yeah. You know, sometimes you have some people, they're from this background or they're from that background. Sometimes you might have a big Jewish population, or maybe you've got an Irish population, or maybe you've got a Polish population, or you've got a Muslim population. Especially in some larger cities, you find different segments. When you start thinking about some countries, maybe Africa, you have all kinds of different dialects, different ideas, and God says, I'm concerned about each individual. Then let's make this point. We've got just another minute here as well. When Jesus said, I want you to go and make disciples, would you say that that's another way of saying just baptize people? No. Would you say that that's a way of making people pew warmers? No. Would you say, is that a way of making people babes in Christ? God wants people to become strong Christians, and after they do that, to be able to go out and teach others. Too often people dunk and drop others.